October 13th, 2015. It was the day that we were changing from cereals to canola. And I said, I yelled down at him. I says, okay, I'm going to move to the front hopper. And he says, well, we'll climb up in between and watch. I says, yeah, stay out of the canola. I just had my head back and I'm just going, what is going on? How can this be happening? Where's the miracle? Life is meant to be lived, right? But you start to think of things a little bit more eternally now. We do. Our faith has become stronger because, you know, we believed in heaven and everything. Yeah, mom passed away. She went to heaven. We'll see her one day. But this gets really real all of a sudden. Really real when you've got your kids there.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to episode 8 of the Farmers of Faith podcast, a place where farmers can share what God has done and is doing in their farm, their family, and their life. Today, we hear from Roger, a grain farmer from Alberta. Roger's name and story might ring a bell. Him and his family suffered a horrible accident on the farm involving his 3 daughters. On that note, this conversation has a pretty tough part to listen to about halfway through, just in case there's any sensitive ears in the room as you're listening to this. But Roger's story is also filled with incredible hope and eye-opening lessons about God's intent for a family's short time on this earth. Among other things, please enjoy. Thank you for being willing to sit down with some random guy who has a random podcast. It's got to be kind of strange, I guess.
Well, it's the whole thing is just a little strange. I've never done anything like it, so mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've never really gotten into the podcast. I always find that I'm busy doing something or whatever, but mm-hmm. But yeah, there'd be hockey podcasts and there'd be hunting podcasts and there'd be farming podcasts, everything, right?
So, yeah. Oh, something for every little aspect of your life. That's for sure.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
I was wondering, could you give us a little bit of a backstory of where you come from and how you grew up? Did you grow up around the area you live now?
You betcha. I'm actually sleeping in my bedroom that I grew up in once I got a bedroom when I was 11 years old. I'm still in that same bedroom with my wife. So,
no kidding. Really?
Yeah. So I grew up here. We're about a half hour west of Red Deer, starting into the foothills. We're kind of within about 20 minutes of the end of farming. Mm-hmm. As far as going west, it's pretty well done within about 20 miles of our place.
Okay.
And my wife grew up about 4 miles north of me.
Oh,
so, okay. Yeah. So I actually went to school with her sisters, twin sisters.
Oh, really?
They were 5 years older than her, and I graduated with them, but I knew them my whole life. But she was the one that stirred my interest when the time came.
So. When did the time come?
We got married in 1993, August. So she graduated like in 91, something like that.
Okay.
And I graduated a few years before that. David Thompson High School out here west of Red Deer and country school. And yeah, we got married and yeah. And then my mom passed away 4 days before our wedding.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
She passed Tuesday and we just couldn't cancel things. We had people coming in from all over Western Canada and
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for our wedding. And so we went through with the wedding and,
goodness.
Dad was alone here. And, one of the things he promised mom before she passed away was, you got to have that farm in Roger's name before you move on to another relationship. So,
Okay.
Yeah. So we bought the farm from Dad in 95. Small farm, just a quarter section, 160 acres, mixed farm. So
okay. Cattle and stuff? Or
yep. Cattle and crops. And we produced everything on the quarter section to run about 40 pairs. every year. So we could produce the straw and hay and feed and everything and pasture.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it was, it was tight, but we were, the biggest thing probably was the grazing. We had an intensive grazing program on there, 8 paddocks that we could move them around through the summer, and we'd run through those paddocks about 3 times in the summer. So, yeah, my wife come from a cattle farm, like they were strictly ranching, and they originally had a hog barns, and then they went into beef cattle. And we were originally dairy, and Dad sold the dairy, and he had an off-farm job then and raised some beef cattle.
Okay. So,
and at the same time that I was, we bought the farm, I was working for John Deere and Red Deer as a technician. So,
okay.
So my background, really, in my training, I went to Olds College for 3 years. I got my ag engineering technology diploma, and then I went back the third year and got my ag mechanics. So,
wow.
Oh, that's my background. Is in the technology side and bringing that to my farm. And
so what's all involved in the life of an ag technician?
Well, the first one, the one that was that I went for in the first place was ag engineering technologist.
Okay.
And that was excellent because it put me in farm structures and ventilation systems and heating systems, as well as machinery design and irrigation system. It put me through the whole thing that basically an agricultural engineer would go through.
Okay, yeah.
But with an emphasis on knowing the layman side as well as the design side.
Okay.
So it wasn't just, you weren't just a high-up engineer that didn't know how to run things and didn't know how to fix things, but you weren't just the guy fixing things either. You knew how they run and operated. So.
Right, yeah.
So I went to that and then went into, went back for another year and got my heavy-duty mechanics. Interprovincial ticket. So that was good. I worked at John Deere in High River for a couple of years and then moved back home, probably in pursuit of my wife.
Oh, yeah.
And got on with Deer Mart and Red Deer and worked for them for another 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Diagnosing and repair and maintenance and preparation of equipment. I did that for quite a few years. And then I moved home, bought the farm in 95. And then took a job just 10 miles from home with a local Massey Ferguson dealer for a couple of years.
Okay.
And I won't make a comment on the equipment or whatever, but you could tell the difference between a company that had a massive support system standing behind it and a company that was kind of on their own at the dealership level in a lot of ways. So dealership-wise, excellent, smart dealership, and really took things into their own hands, do things, because they didn't have the support that the big dealerships did.
Right. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. And then I had had my own mechanic business after that for 14 years.
Oh, really?
So, yep.
Just,
yep. And I run around and fixed just the local, well, within 60 or 80 miles of home.
Oh, okay.
bought an old 1975 GMC one ton with a rescue body on it from a fire department. And they, it just fit a bunch of toolboxes in it. Just perfect. I kind of looked like a Schwann's truck going down the road.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knew who it was and knew me. And, I made a living there for 14 years on my own.
Wow.
But then I ran into a problem. I started absorbing chemicals through my skin.
Really?
Varsol, Loctites, brake clean, things like that, gasoline, things that you, as a younger man, you just don't think about washing your hands in Varsol and in the Varsol tank and everything. But,
but
I started to get pretty sick. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking for another place. And we're farming at this time too, just the quarter section.
Okay.
But I started looking for another place to make a living. And actually, I got offered a job at Olds College. That started in 2011 or 2010, something like that.
Okay.
And they offered me a position teaching Case New Holland service training.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that in the winter right up until this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They just didn't continue face-to-face teaching as of March 1st.
Because of COVID?
You betcha.
Ah, I see.
So here I am still at home. Trapping coyotes and doing what I have to do. Watching the finances a little closer, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, that's too bad.
Of course, a whole bunch of my commodities are already sold and the prices are skyrocketing.
Oh, I know. That's...
Oh, man.
Isn't that just insane?
Yeah, it is. The guy would have known I would have had my college teaching income back just in a month. Mm-hmm. That didn't work out for me, so that was one of the things. But
no, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been able to keep up with the technology, farming technology, really well in that the last 10 years or so.
Okay, because you're teaching it, you have to keep up with it, so to speak.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I was responsible for three products for Case New Holland. I did all of the Case Patriot sprayer training for Canada. Saskatoon and Olds College. So I was training technicians who had to work on those sprayers. So I did all of the sprayer training for like 9 years. There's now a sprayer trainer in Saskatoon. And I did about 50% of the Case Axial Flow combine training. And I did about 50% of the New Holland CR combine training.
Wow.
So I love my products, my sprayer and my two combines. It was very, very fun. Now, I run a John Deere combine, so.
Do you tend to lean more one way than the other when it comes to combines, or is it?
No, it's just my era of combines. I can't afford to have a newer combine, so in the older frame of things, older scheme of things, I couldn't really find a better built combine than a green one. Just was easy to get parts for, and parts availability is big. And I worked on them so much. And so we're running an older combine, like a 9650 STS.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Covers the acres really well and really holds together well for us. So.
Yeah. Some of those machines, they're just tried and true, and they work, and they keep working. Yeah.
Really work, and it works well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can set up any combine you want, a red, a yellow, or a green one. I think they're excellent combines. I think if you're buying a new combine, you almost can't go wrong with a red or yellow one that I teach on, or a new John Deere. But
I'll leave
it at that. I'll make everybody happy on the podcast.
we won't start any major arguments in the.
Don't want to go there.
Yeah.
So that brings us to here we are now,
Have you grown the number of acres? Maybe this is the wrong way to put it. Have you expanded the number of acres you've cropped over the years?
We sold the cattle. Oh, I don't know, about probably 2004, 5 or 6 or something like that. We sold the cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three years of drought, and a couple years of BSE just beat us up pretty good with the cattle.
Yeah, yeah.
So we sold them, and we started to stretch our legs out off of the quarter, and I don't know, we crop probably close to 1,000 acres every year.
Wow.
Still small out in this country. It's interesting down the States when I'm teaching or learning down in Memphis, it's like I ask the question, you know, how many acres you got to have one of those 80-230 Case combines there, that one in the shop. Oh, you got to be a big farmer. You got to farm 300-400 acres to have a combine like that. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, that's a 2,500 acre combine at home,
mm-hmm.
300 acres with those. So it's a little different economics, right?
Yeah. A whole different world, it seems, down there.
And everywhere it's like that, right? You go into the middle of Saskatchewan and small farms, you know, 5-10,000 acres. And out here, we're in the upper small, I guess.
Maybe you've reached the sweet spot.
We've reached the official upper small is what we've reached.
Yeah,
and we got some hay, and we have a little bit of grazing as well that we rent out. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, love the farming. The three of us just have a great time bringing the crop off. And my dad comes out too. He's 86. This November, he turned 86.
Okay.
So he comes out and loves to get in the 4440 and run it too, so.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, very cool.
So talking about the family side of things, I guess if I'm being honest, as this interview was coming up, I was reading a couple articles. You show up in the news a little bit here and there. And in one of the articles, it was mentioning that as you and Benita were starting your family, it was a little bit of a challenge for you guys. It was hard to actually even be able to have kids.
Yeah, that was a challenge for us for sure. We got married in 93. We started trying to have a family 2 or 3 years after we got married.
Mm-hmm.
She was working for the local credit union, and we tried for six years or so.
Mm.
And And the doctor just always assured us, just says, well, if you guys just, you know, you're trying and working that thing so hard and trying to do everything right, that if you just relax, everything will work out. But we had a lot of prayer over our lives and over our bodies and everything else. And, you know, we just trusted that we were going to have some kids someday. But eventually we got to the point where we went and sought some assistance from the fertility clinic in Calgary. And that's when we went through a little bit of consulting and we ended up with our first child, Katie, in 2002, I think it was.
Okay.
So, yeah, September 2002, we got blessed with a beautiful girl.
What was that like when you first realized that, that your wife was expecting? And
So we were married 9 years. And ironically, my mom and dad were married 10 years when I was born, and I was an only child. So so they struggled having kids as well. So it was kind of interesting that we had to kind of go through that same thing. But but we just didn't realize how many people are in the same boat when that, when it comes to that. So yeah, we had our first Katie. Just fantastic. Of course, the center of our world, right? Everything. Yeah. Yeah. They say your first one is made of glass, the rest are made of rubber. You know, you get a little more lazy with the rest of them, with, oh, they'll be okay. Oh, look, they fell. Oh, they'll be all right.
Yeah.
And the first one, you're like, oh, don't let her crash into anything.
Yeah,
we had no idea what was to come in our lives, but but we were, we tried a little bit longer to have another one, another child, and we went back to the clinic. And it wasn't as easy this time. We had to go for a couple, I think, three rounds of IUI this time. And we got pregnant again with twins.
Surprise.
So now we've got three girls in just over 2 years. So
what was that like?
Well, pretty amazing. So you start having those twins, they start to add up in a hurry.
You know,
it's one of those things, you don't get it till you get it. Well, this is one of those things you think, oh, set of twins. Yeah, but that's all of a sudden you've got three times as many as you, what you had. So things add up pretty quick.
Yeah.
And then we decided that we weren't going to go back, that if that's what the Lord had for us, we were going to be satisfied with those three girls, Katie, Jenna, and Dara. And about a month or two, within the first month or two after Bonita stopped nursing, we got pregnant naturally with our fourth, which is our son, Caleb. So we had four kids in 3 years and 2 months. So you want to talk about adding up in a hurry, and well, it was life was big, and we were farming and we were calving out cows and we were doing everything and all these babies. Pretty special.
Yeah. So life on the farm, it was a very much a family unit as you guys lived and farmed.
Absolutely.
Together.
In every way. The dogs, feeding the dogs for pups, having pups and the cattle and then the grain farming. And this was just life. Life was the farm. Life was riding in the back of grain trucks, and life was riding in the tractors and stuff. Life was, still is, you know, just operating the equipment when they were not very old. We started, Katie started raking with the tractor with a 3020 and a rotary rake. When she was about 9 years old. And 2 years later, the girl, the twins, Jana and Dara, they were, Dara was more the machinery operator, and Jana, she was the household looker after. She was cooking all the time and baking. And Derek hated that stuff. She was all about being the tomboy and running equipment. You know, we've got awesome pictures of her and stuff running the rake and doing things.
As I was kind of looking into your guys' story, I came across a video of you, and I wasn't sure which daughter it was, but you guys were driving the combine together.
And she said, I don't want to miss. Man, that was cute. That was our first year with that 9650 STS, and she was running it, and I was sitting right there, but why not? You, if you don't give them an opportunity to be involved and show interest, they're not just going to naturally show it when they're 20 years old.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They're going to go somewhere else. So we always felt if we're going to run this farm and have it passed down to another generation and keep farming, that we need the family involved in the operation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just the way it is. So many people raise their kids up and say, well, go out and get an education and send them to university and they get a degree, and they're not coming back to the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a general rule, they're not coming. And if they do, they're so out of touch. They don't understand the lifestyle, the sacrifice. Mm-hmm. This 8-hour day is non-existent on the farm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's either 16 to 20 hour days, or sometimes it's 2-hour days. Mm-hmm. It's just, you don't count on nothing. Mm-hmm. You can plan all you want, but the farm kind of dictates a whole lot of different stuff is going
to
happen.
Yeah. Even down to the hour, you can plan what you're hoping to do that afternoon, and then something will come up.
Oh, the horse is colicking.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Plans are delayed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one of those things. Hey, that is life.
Yeah. Yeah. On that note, life was going along for you guys, and you guys got a major just explosion in your guys' life. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that is our story, I guess, that most people are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we did run into a glitch in our lives. Mm-hmm. Before that happened or whatever, we were living life. We were living life large. We were very, very out in the community, antique days and different things. We were very gregarious as a family, involved in everything. Everybody knew the Bot kids. They went around in their herd all the time. Right?
Yeah.
And so we were involved with other churches. Love our church, Withrow Gospel Mission, little plug there. And we've been worship pastors there for, oh my goodness, a lot of years now. I can't even remember how many years, but many years, 15 years or better. And so we're always involved in music in the church, but we're involved with other churches and other projects. Always, we got involved with the Food Grains Project, which was another local church, and we got involved with that. And so it was really interesting being out in the community so much. Mm. So we knew so many people, and so many people know us. Like, it's just, that's a part of our lives, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So 2015, October 13th, 2015, it was the day that we were changing from cereals to canola. Mm-hmm. And we had a big day of cleanup. We had to clean the dryer out. We didn't know what the canola was going to test, so we had to do a bunch of cleaning there. We had to clean the trucks out. We had to blow the combine off, clean it up, switching over, service the combine, did a lot of that stuff. And by about mid-afternoon, we were moved down about 6 miles from home, and we had started into some canola, took a sample, and my son and I were down there and took a sample, run it home, and the canola was dry. Pretty amazing. We couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
One black gold. So Caleb and I bombed back down to the field, and we took over, and we ran off a Sammy load of canola. A tandem, like, we've got a truck and tandem trailer that we were using there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, Depker tandem. And so we took off like 1,100, 1,200 bushels, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but I headed her for home with the canola, and I left my son in the combining in the field.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, no problem. He'd been combining for 3 years already.
Mm-hmm.
So 9-year-olds, I know, seems a little young, but I left him in the field, and I met my wife on the road. She was bringing down a single axle 3-ton to fill in while I was emptying out the truck and trailer.
Mm, yeah.
So she ran and caught up with him, and they were having a great time in the field, and he was driving and she was riding with him. So he was alone for, you know, a minute or two. And
right, yeah.
And I bombed home with the first load of canola. And as I pulled into home, the girls met us. It was pretty amazing. I pulled up beside the auger, swing auger, and swung it underneath the truck. And they come out. And bringing the harvest in is very exciting all the time. But when you switch to canola, typically it's kind of the highlight of the year. It's the cash crop. It's the one that's worth the big dollars. Mm-hmm. And a big crop of canolas kind of can save the farm or break the farm mm-hmm. for years. So they come out and we started unloading and they says, well, can we climb up on the back of the truck and watch the canola go out? And I said, you betcha, go up there. So no instructions. They went up on the back of the truck and they were, there's a walkway up there and they're on the walkway. Mm-hmm. We unloaded the back compartment of the truck, of the trailer. And I went and climbed up. I didn't see them. They were inside the trailer. Hmm. So I went up and climbed up the back of the truck trailer. And they were down in the bottom scooping out the corners. Hmm. Just like we always do, right? Clean out the corners of the truck. And they were there. They'd seen me do it lots of times. And I said, I yelled down at them. I says, okay, I'm going to move to the front hopper. And he says, well, we'll climb up in between and watch. I says, yeah, stay out of the canola. Mm-hmm. Don't go in there. Don't do anything. Well, no problem. I went down, I started unloading and, I was taking a sample with a little sample bucket there. I was reaching underneath and mm-hmm. taking a sample. And I noticed the canola wasn't flowing out of the bottom of the truck very well. Mm-hmm. So I climbed up the front of the truck, really to, get mad at the kids for doing something. And, I saw something that was probably the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Hmm. I saw my three daughters, actually the first one, Katie, the oldest, she was already under the canola. They had got in the tank for some reason. We don't know. Hmm. And she was already sucked down in the bottom. Hmm. And, Jana, her head was just going under and Daryl was up to her waist in the canola.
Oh my goodness.
And they yelled and they said, Katie's down in the bottom already. Oh, and goodness. So I jumped over the side. I grabbed a shovel. I jumped off the side of the trailer. I grabbed a shovel and hopped back in. Mm-hmm. It's canola. I tried shoveling, couldn't do a thing. Jana went under mm-hmm. and, Dara continued to sink. I had everything shut off on the truck and the auger and they continued to sink and I could not do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I made a decision that the only thing I could think of was to open the trailer wide open and empty it and pray for the best. Mm-hmm. And so we tried. There was another fella there that was a neighbor where we were harvesting. He was with me. We tried to pull Dara out, and she screamed in pain. It was in so tight. I can't understand it, mm-hmm. but she was in such pain that we couldn't pull her out. Mm-hmm. So she was up over her waist, up into her midsection. Mm-hmm. And so what I did was I opened the bottom wide open and let her go on the ground. And of course it filled up under the trailer and it quit flowing. Mm-hmm. So I had to hop in the truck and I pulled it ahead a bit and I did that about four times till the trailer was empty. And then, I started working on a rescue. Mm-hmm. And that day I called a friend of mine across the road. He was there in minutes. He called 911, within probably time kind of gets blurry, mm-hmm. but within 10 or 15 minutes, we had four, five, six people there. Working on mm-hmm. pulling my girls out of the truck. Mm-hmm. And none of them survived. Mm-hmm. That was the last time I talked to my girls was that afternoon. Mm-hmm. So it was, it's a major change in your life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But immediately I called my friend across the road, cousin, and he called 911. And then I called Benita, my wife, and I said, Benita, we've had a terrible accident. I need you home now. Mm-hmm. And I didn't tell her anything else. Mm-hmm. So her and Caleb, they were unloading the combine. They just shut it off and they got in the truck and they bombed for home as fast as the old 3-ton would go. Mm-hmm. And Benita says, Caleb, I don't know what's happened, but I need you to pray. Mm. So Caleb, little 9-year-old guy, he's sitting there with his hands clasped and he's just praying, praying, going home. And they drove in. And the first thing they saw was the grain auger on its side because I pulled ahead with the swing auger under and it pulled the grain auger over from the pulled it over on the side of the truck. And that's what she thought happened, that I pulled the grain auger over and wrecked it. But when she got up there, she saw that we were pulling the girls out of the grain tank.
Wow.
So she tied right into CPR and everything too. And, and then emergency vehicles started showing up and police. I guess I found out later that basically the Rocky Mountain House detachment emptied out their detachment. They were all parked in our yard, most of them. And the rescue vehicles from Lesleyville and Condor and Rocky Mountain House, they were from all over the place. They filled our farm with rescue vehicles.
Wow, yeah.
And then the helicopters started coming. And they booked all three Stars helicopters to come. There was three at the time to come to our place. And then the one landed, second one landed, and the third one they turned back because we already had declared one of the girls gone for sure. So, so we ended up, Dara actually survived a little bit. They got her in the Stars and she went to the Stollery in Edmonton.
Okay.
We went up there and we saw her for a little bit, but she never regained consciousness. She died in the early morning, next morning.
Whoa.
So we lost our three girls.
Yeah.
And of course, there's lots of details and stuff that, that I don't need to really say, but one of the things that, well, there's a couple things that come to mind. One of the things was I was, you know, I'd kind of, everybody's working on the girls, on the three girls laying on the ground and there's emergency vehicles and everything's going on and there's just a buzz. And I was leaning, laying with my, or standing with my back up against the tractor tire. And I just had my head back and I'm just going, what is going on? How can this be happening? Where's the miracle? You know, our pastor's there, Benita's family's there, we're, my family's there, you know, we're praying. Where's the miracle? Where, like, when are these girls going to miraculously rise up and survive? But there wasn't a miracle.
So what do you do with that?
Well, let me go there just for a second. Bonita come walking by and I was standing there with my eyes closed, my head up against the fender of the 4440 and she grabbed me by the shirt collar and she did something that really set us up for survival, I believe. And she grabbed me and she was a mess. She had blood and vomit and everything else all over her face because she's doing CPR on these girls as well. And she says, Roger, I don't blame you. I love you and we'll get through this together. And she set us up. Doesn't even to this day, she doesn't even really remember. She just, that was just in the heat of the moment. Oh, I love you. I don't blame you. And we'll get through this together. So it's a bit of a Stephen Curtis Chapman moment, if you are at all familiar with that. He lost a daughter. Anyways, there's a story there, and I call it a Stephen Curtis Chapman moment, but we knew of that story. But he set their family up for survival, too, with something that he said. And I don't think you can say those things without the Lord directing you or guiding you or something. The Lord was in it. And Benita's got her take on some things, you know, that scripture just explains it so perfect what was happening in the spiritual realm during all of this, because there's no question there was a lot of stuff going on in the spiritual realm during this accident. Satan thinks he's got things under control, and he really doesn't. And we still don't understand all what's going on. But here we are, faced with a challenge.
You
know?
You and I were talking a little bit before, and you had mentioned that it's been 5 years since that happened.
Everything's had a 5-year anniversary since it happened.
Hmm.
Now we're working on 6 years. Hmm. Everything's had a 5-year anniversary. Fifth year of Christmas, fifth year of New Year's, fifth year of birthdays, fifth year of all this stuff. You can't believe it's been 5 years. But there's a few things that you know, come to mind when I say that. And it's a way that I cope with things. You know, the Lord's definitely been carrying us for sure. Our community, the community that we were involved with, the churches that we were involved with, you know, all the different community projects that we were involved with. Yeah, they've carried us for sure with encouragement and prayers and everything else, as have people all across the world, really. And the prayers have carried us. We covet that and we reap the benefits of those prayers to this day. There's still people, older people than us, another generation older than us, and we're losing them, that have prayed for us every night since the accident. And we know that that carries us. And when we hear of somebody passes away and we hear the stories of them praying for us every night since the accident, you know, that really is heavy on us. It's really heavy on our hearts that we've lost that carrying power, you know. Those saints that look after us. So a lot of people carry us. But when something like this happens, you start to think about life a little bit differently. So we were completely engrossed in this life together. We were busy, we were tired, we were exhausted. Yet tomorrow came and we did it all again. And, you know, every summer there was 4 different camps to go to, kids camps, and we didn't want them to all do the same thing, so we let them choose. You know, we ran everywhere. There was camping trips and trips to Fairmont and so many different things that we did all the time. We were exhausted people, and actually we're still kind of exhausted people, because we continue to do the same thing. Life is so important that life is meant to be lived, right? But you start to think of things a little bit more eternally now. We do. Like, for instance, we're 5 years. You know, the Bible tells us, I read it over and over again, it says, you know, we're really only promised at the very best 70-ish years, right? 70 and 10. Like 70 years is about all we're really guaranteed. After that, you're pretty much in bonus territory. You know, I'm 53. And that 70, 75 isn't that far away, and we're 5 years closer to it. Now I realize we could, you know, it sounds kind of morbid thinking that way, but it's eternity. If you're a believer and you truly believe what you know, that's the thing. We're faced with a situation where we had a choice to turn our backs on everything we've learned and believed for almost 50 years, and Benita almost 45. Or are we going to walk it out and continue to proclaim what we know is true? Are we going to turn our back? Like, how insane do you have to be to turn your back on something you've believed in and told people your belief system and walked in your whole life to turn your back on it in an instant? And I just couldn't do it. I'm just that stubborn. I guess we're just that stubborn that if this is the way we believed before the accident, there's no reason we should ever change that belief system now. Because it's still true today.
Were there times where you really did want to turn away from your faith or?
Nothing. Couldn't do it. It's just, maybe that's pure stubbornness. But it's just like, it doesn't make sense to me to say what you believe for 50 years and then all of a sudden tomorrow go, wait a minute, nope, I don't believe any of that. Then how strong is it? It's always a question. So it's just, no, we are who we are, and we're gonna continue to walk this out, and God is still really, really good. And in my situation, he's good on my mountaintops and he's good in my valleys. And so we know that. So We also have been Christians long enough. We're maybe starting to mature a little bit. I don't know. Maybe a little bit of meat and potatoes now as opposed to milk. But we realize through some of the stuff we've gone through that we, as Christians, as leaders in the church, we really don't have permission, if you will, to speak into people's lives unless we've gone through what they're going through. You can work that around and say it however you want, but it's really like that. It's like, don't come to me with all the answers about my finances when you can't get your credit card paid off.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna bring biblical financial truths to me and expect me to accept it, you probably should have your finances in order.
Hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And if you're gonna tell me how to treat my neighbors and how to deal financially with my neighbors and my friends and everything, you probably should be known as a generous and fair and equitable person.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm not going to give you permission to speak to me. So that's kind of like where we go through our valleys, mm-hmm. and we walk through them and we come out the other side biblically or with God. We maybe have an authority there to help somebody else walk through a similar valley.
Mm-hmm. I imagine you have met a fair amount of people who you've been able to speak to because of some of the things you've gone through. Am I safe in assuming that?
Absolutely.
Hmm.
Now, in saying that, it was about 3 days after the accident that we got contacted by a couple from Lacrete, Alberta.
Okay.
North of Grand Prairie, whole bunch. And they had lost a son that got sucked into a trailer load of canola.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And we're very close to the local Hutterite colony here. I know they don't want any accolades or anything, but we were just getting to know them really well. The year before, we had spent the entire harvest custom combining with them because we were 100% hailed out.
Oh.
So we took our combine up there and spent a bunch of time with them. And I'll tell you, we had some fantastic discussions, Christian discussions with the guys. And at the same time that we had our accident, their field boss was very sick with pancreatic cancer. And he passed away, and we got invited, of course, to the funeral shortly after our funeral.
Oh, wow.
Three funerals, right? But we met a family that had their son get sucked into a truckload of canola and survived.
Oh.
He come out the bottom. They opened it up and got him out the bottom, and he survived.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, so there are these connections that will never be severed.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was that same fall that the family out in Burstall, Saskatchewan, lost their son and grandfather in a truckload of canola. The son got sucked in, and the grandfather went in after him, and he got sucked in as well, and they lost them both.
Wow.
But you see, they didn't come from a Christian's perspective that I know of, and I heard through the grapevine later, because we have family down in Medicine Hat that's not far from Burstall, they said that they kind of blamed themselves for our situation because they didn't speak out about what happened to them. And we just, you know, that really saddens us, because our situation can't be carried by them.
Right.
Just can't. You know, theirs is heavy enough to carry on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they still continue to carry that on their own, not from a Christian perspective. So I can't imagine. Where's the hope?
Right.
We have no question because of, you know, we led our kids to the Lord. They all were showing fruit and asked Jesus to come and live in their heart and believe the same as us. We have no question one day we will have a great reunion.
Mm-hmm.
One day.
Mm-hmm.
So our hope has become greater.
Mm-hmm.
Our faith has become stronger because, you know, we believed in heaven and everything. Yeah, mom passed away. She went to heaven. We'll see her one day. But this gets really real all of a sudden, really real, when you've got your kids there. And it's pretty tangible. Our faith is pretty tangible right now. So as a side note, it comes to this COVID stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't bother us that much. And that doesn't diminish anything that anybody's going through right now in this time.
Mm-hmm.
But from an eternal perspective, again, maybe our stubbornness, but it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. So we could hole up and keep our story quiet and get over COVID, or we could die from COVID and see the girls sooner, or we could continue to maintain our freedom and get over it. Like the fear isn't so high mm-hmm. as without Christ. Mm-hmm. So that's a sideline, right? Side.
It paints a broad picture to, there's a lot of things in life that we could cower in fear from, right?
Yeah.
But as we live life in the name of Christ, we have such a hope and such a freedom to live life to the full. We don't have to cower in fear.
Yeah. No, it's so true. Mm-hmm. It's so true. And now I haven't got everything figured out. There's days I get down. We have their pictures on our fireplace mantle all the time. Mm-hmm. We lead worship every Sunday from our living room now. Mm-hmm. And it's broadcast at the church and goes out live stream, but they're with us when we lead worship all the time. And there's some days I look up there and I go, you've got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of a distant thing. All of a sudden it's there every day. And yet it's a different life. It seems like.
Mm-hmm. What was it like going back into leading worship after the accident?
Well, it's hard to put thoughts to that or put words to that, because even before the accident, I was always a bit of a stickler for the songs that I led. We are a fairly contemporary church in our worship and everything, mm-hmm. in our expression of worship. And so we sing a lot of new songs and definitely mix them in with the old songs. And we're a real blend of that. But we're sure not scared of a new song as long as it's biblical and it's biblical truth.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be biblical truth. Okay, that's fine. That was always a real sticky point for me as a worship leader. I want that to be a song that everyone can grab onto and everyone can apply to their own life. Mm-hmm. That's always been a real point for us as worship leaders. But now you come back and we took some time off and we had some guest worship leaders come in, and the local Bible college took our worship leading for a period of time. But we come back and I had to do it. I had to lead Matt Redman's song, You Give and Take Away.
Hmm.
You Take Away, right? I had to lead that because that's the fact.
Mm.
That's the truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
And it's such a strong song. What's the title of the song?
Blessed be your name.
Be your name.
Yeah, yeah.
Blessed be your name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Blessed be, when the sun's shining down on me, when the world's all as it should be, blessed be your name. I'm going to bless your name when it's good. Oh, what about when the road's marked with suffering, when there's pain in the offering?
Mm-hmm.
I need to choose. I need to do the David thing. I need to choose. Don't feel like it right now, but I got to choose to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I will choose to bless your name. Mm-hmm. So we had to lead that song. Mm-hmm. So now when we lead, so many songs, so many worship services out of a place of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, it was a lot of head stuff, the right choices, the right songs, the right doctrine, the right terminology, truth. And now it's experiential as we lead it. We stand up there every Sunday and we lead worship. And, you know, when we sing, blessed be your name, we mean it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so our congregation, of course, and so many people out there on the live stream and stuff can see us. They know who we are.
Right.
They're watching us stand up there, and we're, you know, we always pray that maybe seeing us sing these songs of strength,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes brokenness or forgiveness or whatever it is, that if we can do it, they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. if we can do this going through what we've gone through,
mm-hmm.
they can do it too. Mm-hmm. You can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Get on the wagon. We'll put it together, you know, because that's one thing that we found is we can't do it alone. We got to do it together. So we've had some friends that have had some pretty serious tragedy in their lives the last few years. And from a Christian perspective, our Christian friends, it's easy to talk to them through that, right? Because they understand, have the same understanding, biblical understanding. How do you address one of your longtime school friends that loses a child, but they don't have any biblical understanding?
Yeah.
Or they have a skewed biblical understanding.
Mm-hmm.
How do you talk to them? You say, well, you just got to trust in the Lord and pray and he'll get you through. They don't understand that. Like I had a gal that I graduated with. She lost her son coming up a year ago, I guess, on a car accident. As far as I know, non-Christian people never made a commitment. But, you know, she says, how do you get through it? As well, I don't have a magic answer for you because we have, you know, a little different belief system, you and I. But what I can tell you is if you're ever in a situation that you need to talk to somebody, if you ever need to scream and yell at somebody or cry, you know, whatever it is, I'm here. I can do that. I can walk through it with you. I can bring a level of understanding that a lot of people won't. We went out to Humboldt a week after the Humboldt crash. I went and finished teaching here. I had to go out and have a meeting in Saskatoon. I said, you know, Dad, do you want to go with me for a couple of days? Let's go out to Humboldt. So we went out there. Driving out to Humboldt, we're going, how arrogant of us to believe we can bring anything to all these people who have lost so much, you know? And we made a couple phone calls. And we found a connection, because there always seems to be a connection. We found a connection to the father of the coach of the hockey team, Darcy Hogan's dad.
Okay.
He wrote. We found out that Darcy's cousin was the pastor of the Alliance Church right here in Sylvan Lake beside us. So we made a few phone calls and went through, and they says, yeah, give Leroy a call. So we called up Leroy and said, could we just come and talk to you, you know, this is who we are. He goes, well, I know who you are. There you go, eh? Because this is, you know, shortly after. Because when we heard about that accident, it took us right back to pulling those girls out of the grain trailer. What those folks are going through. So we went, Leroy met us, he took us to his house, and we sat there all afternoon and listened to stories. Listen to them tell stories about their son. That's all we can do. You know, they're Christian. They're all Christian people. They understand the situation. They understand who God is, and they know where their strength lies, but they need to talk. And so they just spent 3-4 hours. They just told us about the things Darcy was doing, how he treated his players, the prayer that was put into every day before the day ever started, the prayer around the arena, all this stuff, you know. We just listened. We just listened. I didn't have any advice at all. But we're willing to sit there and listen because we understand you just got to talk sometimes. It's really raw, right? So we listened. We had a great time, and we talked to Leroy a couple times a year now. He's in Alberta here now. And so continue to make these connections that are quite remarkable, actually.
Right, yeah. All of a sudden, your guys' life has turned around into just a ministry.
And when you're in a situation, you may have a whole schedule of things you got to do, and I got to be somewhere at 3, and I got to be somewhere at 4 and 5. And yet, we've found out little meat and potatoes stuff here. We've realized that what's important sometimes is right now. Right now, what you're doing, and you're listening, or in a conversation, or whatever. And you can't cut that off some agendas. You've got to be in the moment. One of the things that I felt that I didn't know how to bring it up to Benita after the accident, but it was like 3 days or something, 2, 3, 4 days after. And I said to her, I don't really know how to say this, but it feels like they've been gone for so long already. And I didn't understand that. But what, like we've had a lot of downloads from, we believe is from the the Lord speaking to us and thoughts and sermons, whatever. But I think one of the things that came down that explained this was when you don't renew relationship, the memories fade.
Yeah.
When you're breathing right here, you know, I'm talking to you, you're talking to me. If we were face to face, we could remember just a few seconds ago, like it was just a few seconds ago, because we're continuing to renew the fellowship and the relationship all mm-hmm. the time. But you know, when our girls, when their hearts stopped beating and they stopped taking breaths, that was the end of renewal of family relationship, any mm-hmm. kind of relationship. And so you're left with nothing present and everything past.
Mm-hmm.
Left with memories. And those memories, they're just that. They're memories. They're not fresh. They're not right now, right? They're
right.
Not tangible right now renewal. So it seemed like it was a long time ago, really soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what the Lord told me was, you know, what he taught me through that was, we're given so many breaths. And it's biblical. It's right in the Bible. We're mm-hmm. given so many breaths in this life, and we don't know how many it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought a message to my family reunion the year after. I said, you know, how many know what this breath that I'm taking right now is for? I'm going to take a breath right now. What is this breath for? And I took a deep breath, and everybody kind of looks at me like, I said, keep it simple. What's this breath for? You know what? That breath is meant solely for the purpose of keeping you going till the next breath.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what it's, what you do while you're taking that breath and while you're sustained from that breath is up to you. So if you take that breath, and to use a Eugene Peterson, to use that now breath, right?
Yeah.
If you take that now breath and you do nothing but live in the past, you've wasted that breath. That very precious gift mm-hmm. of that now breath, because we're not meant to live back there. We're meant to live now. Mm-hmm. When that breath is so important, right?
Right.
So if you take that breath, that now breath, and all you do is live in the future 25 years and plan for the future and put away money for the future and do all that stuff, you've wasted this now time again.
mm-hmm.
You've wasted this now time. It's so important.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can take that breath and remember the past, but don't live there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take that breath and plan for the future, but don't live there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably you'll never get there.
Yeah.
You may get there, but it ain't promised at all.
Yeah, it's not a guarantee.
It is not guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
So now we take these breaths and we go like, okay, what's the next project? What's the next adventure?
Mm-hmm.
What's the next whatever? We're planning for the future. Caleb now is 15. It's 5 years and a bit later. He's 15 years old.
Hmm.
He's such a great friend and comrade and partner and everything else. Hmm. Like you can go to the mountains and he blows me away on the snowmobile in the mountains. And, you know, he's our main combine operator, but he can do anything on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's now time. We plan for the future and we're thinking about the future, you know, and succession planning and stuff. But, you know, we take these breaths and we try to make the most of them in general.
Mm-hmm. I think that message is so applicable to life on the farm, because it seems like everything you do on the farm is kind of in hopes of something in the future, right?
Yeah.
And that's all fine and good, like you say, but oftentimes in the midst of all of that, we kind of forget that we're right here, right now, and we need to be living right here, right now.
It's so true. Mm. And that, the Dodge commercial, you know, and on the eighth day, God made a farmer, you know, that's mm-hmm. really it. All the things you do, all the things that exhaust you so much, but as a farmer, you keep doing them, you know, you shut the tractor down for 2 hours in the afternoon to mend the broken leg of a meadow lark. I mean, you just ran over it with the swather. Now you got to go split the broken leg that you just wrecked. And that's a farmer,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wait all those months to get a baby horse and you watch it die in your arms and you say, well, next year, and you go to bed and you get up and you start it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a farmer. It's now. It's now planning for the future, but you live in it now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just such a crazy life. It's such a rewarding life, right?
Yeah, that's right. it's the type of life, it's easy to get lost in the busyness of it all and stuff. But it's important though, to, like you say, slow down, appreciate the moment that you're in, and look for what God is trying to teach you in that very moment.
You find those times of rest in the midst of everything. You know, the sun goes down, combine's coming across the field, and you climb out and sit on the cab of the grain truck.
Yeah.
With the lights off, and you just listen and watch the lights come across. I mean, there's those times that you just breathe it in, right? You just take those mouth breaths again, right? And you just breathe it in. Sometimes you're so exhausted that you just don't think that you can get another breath.
Yeah.
And as a family, raising a family, you know what? When we choose to start that family, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be exhausted from being a family all the time. When you choose to start a family, you better be ready to give it all you got.
Yeah.
Pour into your family, and you get up and you do it again. And you're tired, and you get up and you do it again.
Yeah.
And we're so glad we did, right?
Right.
We're so glad we did, and wouldn't have changed the amount of time we had with those girls for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Glad we were as busy as we were. Glad we homeschooled and had them at home for so much of our life, right?
Right, yeah.
Another decision we made early on, that course was exhausting. It wasn't because of a school issue. It was because we just couldn't bear to see them get on the bus at 7:30 in the morning and come home at 4 or 4:30 and be gone all those hours of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we get what's left.
Right, yeah. It's funny you say this. My wife and I were just talking tonight. Our little girl is going to be the age where she can go to kindergarten this next school year. If, I guess, if they have school. But anyway, that aside.
Yeah.
Man, it's such a hard, heavy decision.
Yeah.
It comes and you realize, oh, like 4 years has already gone by. Like if we send her to school, she'll be gone till she graduates, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we had the four kids in three years and 2 months. And I said, we're on the 5-year plan. In 5 years, they'll all be in elementary school. In 5 years, they'll all be in David Thompson High School. And in 5 years, they'll all be gone. It didn't work out that way.
Right.
But you know, we had our kids all go through kindergarten, and it was great building blocks. And we had them all go through grade one. And then we came home to homeschool after that. So, pretty amazing. Yeah. Learning to exist together all day long in the same house, in the same room, was quite a learning experience.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that we conquered it either.
Oh,
but that's part of life.
Yeah, that's the growing and stretching part of life, right? Learning how to.
But it's amazing to see how the growing and stretching part of life is what kills some families. And they just don't understand that that's really the small stuff. It seems so big at the time, but it's really the small stuff. Don't sweat the small stuff, because what the alternatives could be, well, I can talk to you about what the alternatives can be.
Yeah, with the perspective of something so tragic. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Looking back, all those struggles were pretty small.
Yeah, and I wonder if sometimes looking back, some of the maybe more tough moments become moments that you look back on with fondness, right? Like a temper tantrum, you know, that at the time just really grinded your gears. All of a sudden, you look back on it and you see, oh, yeah, that was her personality or something. You know, not necessarily speaking to your girl specifically, but in other cases, you know. But.
Dara, our youngest girl, and Caleb were inseparable. They were always together, the two youngest. The youngest twin and Caleb. And fight the whole time, they were together. And yet when they were apart, they were absolutely miserable. And we look back, we see pictures, we look back. I give Benita a suggestion one time. I said, get one of my shirts and put them both in the shirt and make them walk around that way for a couple hours. The get along shirt.
Oh.
Oh my goodness. We see that picture now and they are, well, she's ripped and Caleb just is getting a kick out of it. Eh? Cause he's in the same shirt with her. But it's, look back on the things and you go, at the time, you're so mad. Mm-hmm. And angry. Come on, you guys. But looking back, it's like, it's the small stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that's why you telling your story like this is so important, because oftentimes as life gets busy, and I'm just speaking as a parent here, life gets busy and, you know, the things of taking care of the kids come along and you know, they become a burden or something to get through. And mm-hmm. it's so eye-opening to hear your story, and it's putting a lot of things into perspective as far as how to approach every single moment with my kids.
Yeah, it is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're exhausted, it's even more important.
Yeah.
You worked all day, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All day, you got up early, you come home, and mm-hmm. now's daddy time. Mm-hmm. And you're exhausted. Well, you know what? You'll recover.
Yeah.
And that's really a life thing, right? So many times, Benita and I will get on YouTube and we'll pull up a worship song because we're coming up with a worship set for, you know, next Sunday or whatever. And we'll pull up a worship song. Yeah, I think we should do this one this Sunday. And then there'll be a link to another song. Mm. And then there's a link to another song. Uh-huh. Oh, look at this song. And an hour later, you don't realize it, but you passed your bedtime and you've just soaked in a bunch of worship music.
Mm-hmm.
And it really helps. It rejuvenates mm-hmm. me. It energizes me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm tired, more tired than I was and going to bed, but it picks me up.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the verse of, come unto me, ye are weary, and I will give you rest. So often we think that, like, okay, I'll get a good night's sleep and I'll be back on track tomorrow. But what happens? Next morning rolls around and
You're
pooped.
You're just not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Man, I was going to ask you a question of if you had a message that was on your heart to speak to the farmers of today, but would you have anything to say to that, or is it kind of what we've been talking about, what you would say?
Yeah, there. You know, I've had many, many downloads, if you will, you know, words from the Lord, but I just leave it at that. Like, I have to preach everything that I've found out. I haven't got things figured out yet. Every day is a new challenge.
Mm-hmm. Have we covered the topics that you were hoping to cover, or is there anything else on your heart that you're hoping to share? Or?
You know, I would say that we realized that what we've gone through is pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing we realized was everybody's going through something. Mm-hmm. No matter how big or how small it is, and it's really, really, really unfair to compare.
Mm.
It's fair to say, well, what I'm going through is nothing compared to what you guys went through. But the problem with that is, what we went through was, it is what it is. Yeah, it's a big deal. We lost a huge part of our lives. Our lives changed forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what you're going through is everything to you.
Mm.
It's life itself to you.
Mm-hmm.
What Bill is going through, or Bob is going through, or Barb, or whoever,
mm-hmm.
I guess that was all the B names, but whoever's out there, everybody's going through something, and to them, it's the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got to have an understanding that this is our thing that we went through, and to us, it was the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the biggest thing in our world. Our world came crashing in, but the next person is going through their own stuff.
Yeah.
And it's crashing in too. And it's a hard thing to understand because you're in your own thing and you're in your own stuff and it's the world to you and you don't understand how bad it is for the next person or how tough it is or how deep it is.
Right.
So whatever that is, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll leave you with that.
I can only imagine how what you've said here tonight is just, I believe it's going to speak to a lot of people out there. Not that we have, you know, a crazy amount of listeners or anything, but I believe that a lot of people are going to take what you've said here to heart. So
appreciate that.
Oh, I appreciate you sitting down and sharing what you have. You've given me something to aspire towards. So.
Oh, that's pretty humbling. Well, we're just ordinary people. And
Well, you and your family are definitely answering the call to what God has called you guys to do. And so,
well, thank you.
Thanks again, Roger. We'll keep in touch, and I'll let you know when this is out. And
don't worry. series. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh. Bless you guys.
Yeah, same to you. So there it is. Thanks so much, Roger, for sharing what you did, all of the pain and the healing of the past. And I can only imagine, like I was saying there, what God is going to do through the telling of your story here. So thank you so much. Thank you, the listener, for tuning in. It's been a little bit of time since our last episode, and maybe that's just the way it's going to have to be for now. I had hoped to maybe put out an episode every 2 weeks, but just the way it goes, finding someone to interview and putting it all together while trying to, you know, do farmhand stuff and whatnot, it turns out it's more like maybe once a month is something more attainable, at least for now. So thank you for sticking with us. And in the meantime, please feel free to visit farmersoffaith.org. On there, you'll find the episodes as well as a link to the prayer request page. If you have anything that needs praying for, please fill out the form there and we'll get praying for you right away. There's a button there. If you so desire, you can click it and we'll share your request here on the podcast with the Farmers of Faith community and we can all be praying for you that way. On that note, Roger and I were talking off air and if you guys could keep him and his family in your prayers, they get a lot of opportunities to speak here and there and share their story and even to a lot of non-Christian audiences, which is a pretty amazing thing. So if you remember them from time to time, just pray for them and their opportunities that they're presented with. So in the meantime, visit the website, or we do post things on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram from time to time. But yeah, we look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks.